Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Today I'm going to talk about, it's January, and our theme for the month is renewal. And I want to talk about a kind of renewal, trying to see things anew. That's what I want to talk about, really how to see things anew. And to do that, I thought I would take the fourth koan in the Mumin Khan. Mumin Khan is the most, I think, probably the most foundational koan collection. And the fourth one is very short. It goes like this. Wakuan said, "Why does the barbarian from the West have no beard?" That's it. Now, who's the barbarian from the West?
Bodhidharma.
Everybody knows that. Everybody who read that, every monk who reads that knows that. You may not have, but everybody knows that the barbarian from the West is Bodhidharma. And everybody knows something else about Bodhidharma. Here is Bodhidharma right here. I have another picture of Bodhidharma downstairs, but I just couldn't bring it up. So here he is. You know, he's our first ancestor. He really is the guy who brought Zen from India to China. Mythical figure. Wild man. Big eyebrows. Bulging eyes. I love this statue in particular because it's coming right out of the wood. He's like coming straight out of the earth. he's a real down-to-earth guy with hair, actually. And, oh, he does have hair in the back, you see. Just a bald spot on top. And unlike the monks who would be shaven. And also he has a big bushy beard. Always. Never without a beard. So. So that question has become... We don't know much about Wakuan, but we know that that question has become a Zen classic. Bodhidharma is as I said, he's really kind of a mythical fellow, but he represents for me the kind of wild and natural way of Zen. He also represents he's a serious character, a serious meditator. Sitting is his thing. You know, when he comes to India from China, has a bad interview with the emperor, local emperor in China, that's so excited to see him. And so he leaves and sits in a cave for many years, facing the wall, famously. and there are no razors there, so, you know, he just grows. And when he gets tired, he cuts off his eyelids. So that's why he has bulging eyes, so that he doesn't fall asleep. It works, I guess. And then he throws his eyelids outside the cave onto the ground out there. And there, would you believe, for the first time ever, grows up green tea and to keep him awake. You see? So it all worked out for him. And even today, Wes will know this, there's a whole sort of motif of Bodhidharma mugs that, because he's the patron saint of tea. So he's a serious practitioner, not messing around. And he sat and sat there in his cave, losing himself, you know, layer by layer. That's the way I think of it. And of our practice, getting deeper and deeper, quieter and quieter. There's an Ikkyu poem, famous Zen poet Ikkyu, about Bodhidharma. I love this poem. Peace isn't luck. For 6 years, stand facing a silent wall until the hue of your face melts like a candle. No luck involved. You got to work at this practice until the you of yourself, of your face, melts like a candle. I think Zen practice can help us learn to get quieter, to settle down, to be more at peace with ourselves, to be less anxious, to be more at peace with ourselves and with others. And there are levels of Zen. There are levels of quiet. There are levels of losing yourself. There are levels of quiet and stillness of heart. And it's possible to get so quiet that you lose any idea of yourself. That is possible and worth leaning into. When you look at yourself in the mirror, literally and metaphorically, you can see yourself without judgment, without your preconceptions about yourself, without even a name. It's possible to forget all those preconceptions. And when you look out onto the world, see yourself, others, you can see them without judgment. Without preconceptions and without names. So if we get quiet enough, we lose our judging and our organizing self, the self that puts things into categories. And then we can see things with different eyes. And that's the state that Walk One points to. How is it that Bodhidharma has no beard? He's got a beard. In what world does Bodhidharma not have a beard? To see that no beard, we have to take a journey. And that journey involves dropping something, leaving something behind. Because the Zen points to the world, a way of being that has no self, in which the self has been shed, melted. And a world where there's no judgments or preconceptions or even names. And in Zen we call that the absolute world, absolute self, which they say coexists with the relative world. All the time, those two worlds are existing. Both are true. So the world, there is a world of beards and there is a world of no beards. No beards. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no beard. That's exactly the world that we chant is pointing to. And according to the tradition, this way of seeing no beard is closer to the way things really are. it's the world before we start to objectify it, before we start to shape it, you know, with our names and our categories and our thinking. Because once we name something, once we name something Jizo or a cabinet or a chair, we don't really need to see it anymore. We don't need to see see it in the same way. We've already organized it. And the book's kind of closed on it. We don't really need to see the shape of it, the color of it, the nuance of it, the complexity of it, the material it's made of. It kind of becomes stale. We're constantly doing this. We're constantly, in a very kind of subtle way, organizing the world. And we see, and here's something else we do. It's not just organizing the world. It's organizing the world in a way that, yes, we can understand, and also that suits us. In a subtle way, I think, we see the world as it's useful to us. And Zazen allows us to take a break from that, to have the world not be useful to us, not to be a tool for us, not even to be related to us exactly, or in the same way that we're used to. And then we can relate to it in a different way that doesn't own it, that doesn't feel ownership of it, that doesn't name it, that doesn't have me in the middle of it. So that Zazen allows us to take a break from that and allows the world just to be, not in a useful way, but without our agenda creeping into it. So to see things just as they are. Wes sent me a picture this last week that he'd taken. I don't have time to do stuff that I should do, so I didn't print it out. You know, I have to find a color printer somewhere. And, yeah. Anyway, it's of a tea bowl from the top, looking down. I'm gonna try to explain it to you. A matcha tea bowl, so it's, you know, kind of a large tea bowl, but looking straight down from the top at it, and it's got bright green matcha in it. Beautiful. It's a beautiful picture. Bright green matcha. And it's on a mat that is also green. And Wes's note on it is, all of a sudden, why don't you tell me what did you realize, Wes?
This had nothing to do with thought. I just looked at it and I said, oh my God, it's an Enso. Enso is a big circle in black. And that's what it looked like. It looked like a three-dimensional Enso with the middle being green and the outside being green.
Yeah. All of a sudden, here Wes has been doing tea for 100 years, and all of a sudden he looks down and he sees, oh my God, I've been doing Enso practice all this whole time. There it was, in just a moment. And I do think that, so that there's an example of a new way of seeing all of a sudden, when if you can loosen your way of seeing, I've just always seen the bowl, there it is, a bowl, to be able to see something different. That's the artist's eye, I think. Do you remember when Bruce Morser came and talked to us, you know, the artist, illustrator, really? And also, we, of course, last year we had a panel talking about Zen eye, artist's eye, and he talked about really kind of breaking out of the chains of seeing, at one point, seeing a tree as a tree, or a swing as a swing. But to just see it as it is, without that idea of tree, swing, beard, Bernetta, and all the associations that I bring to that. It opens the door for something else to appear. And of course that means in the visual field, but it also means in many other ways as well, whether we're dealing with people or problems or what have you. Zen can really teach us to loosen our grip on things in a way that allows us to see something different, to see it from a different perspective, and to see something beautiful maybe where we hadn't before. Zen says that that without knowing it, we're imprisoned by a labyrinth of words and categories. That's not our fault. We just fell into this. And it's formed by our language, by our names, by our categories. And those things, that way of seeing things it's sticky. It's hard to remove ourselves from. Hard to get unstuck from. So we sit quietly and let that, and I think we have a better chance to unstick ourselves from just, you know, our particular way of looking at the world and viewing things. There's a Jataka tale that brings to mind for me. Do you know what the Jataka tales are? Anybody want to tell me? Besides Wes. Wes knows. Somebody else. What's a Jataka tale? Oh, somebody knows this. Just guess.
Well, I sort of know that there are some stories appropriate for children.
Yes. They're often sort of seen as children's stories, but they're stories. They're a little bit like fables. I think the Jataka tales and the Aesop's fables are the two oldest sort of collections of fables. And they're of the previous lives of the Buddha. They're stories of the previous lives of the Buddha. So when he wasn't enlightened, he was on his journey. So he's more like us in those, you know, days, making kind of mistakes and then overcoming obstacles. And I've used various Jataka tales, but I just bought a book yesterday on the Jataka tales with a bunch of commentaries, and I'm going to use more Jataka tales as well as more koans in this next year. So this is one that actually Joseph Campbell in Hero with a Thousand Faces uses, and I love this story. Anyway, shouldn't really preface things by saying you love this story. So this fella who is born... let's see if I can get this here. Yeah. The Bodhisattva is born to a king and queen. And remember, this is a previous life of the Buddha. And the soothsayers say he's going to be a great king, and he's going to become fantastic with weapons. So you should name him with five weapons in particular. You should name him Prince Five Weapons. So they do. So his name is Prince Five Weapons. It's kind of nice for me, because I don't have to call him Angulimala or something like that. So he's Prince Five Weapons, and the name of the Jataka tale is Prince Five Weapons and Sticky Hair. So he's born, and his king, his father sends him to college when he's 16, and college in this case is... a spiritual teacher, spiritual and, you know, and that's going to teach him all kinds of things, including how to use weapons. So he becomes very skilled in five weapons, just as was foretold. And so it's about 3 years later, he comes back home. He's coming back home, but he decides to go a different way home, and he goes through... a dark forest. Yeah. So the locals say, what do you think they're going to say? Don't go in the dark forest. Duh. Everybody knows Bodhidharma has a beard, and everybody knows you don't go into that forest. Well, he does. Because he says, you know, I got these five weapons, and I'm really good at them. Mm-hmm. And he feels very confident that he can meet anything. They tell him, there is this monster in there, Monster Sticky Hair, and he is big and bad and hungry. So he goes in, and before you know it, there's this monster as tall as a tree, with a head as big as a house, with tusks, hair all over his body, brown teeth, and he says, where are you going in my forest? I'm gonna gobble you up. And Prince Five Weapons says, I'm not afraid. I'm going to kill you. And I'm going to do it with my first two weapons, which is a bow and an arrow, and poisoned arrow. So he gets out, he shoots him 30 times with these arrows. Well, no, nothing. He's sticky hair. So the arrows just stick to him, and they don't go through. And so then he gets his 33-inch sword out, and guess what happens? Sticks to him. No. And he throws his spear at him, sticks at him, hits his club, sticks at him. Sticky Hair picks him up. He got him in his hand, and then Prince Five Weapons, he's cool. And anyway, so he kicks him with his one left leg, sticks to him, kicks him with his right leg, hits him with his hand, sticks to him, head, butts him, stuck. So Sticky Hair says, well, I got you now. And Prince Five Weapons says, I'm not afraid. And Sticky Hair has never encountered somebody like this who's just not worried at all, evidently. And so he says, the monster says, what is, why aren't you afraid? I'm going to eat you. And he says, because I have a thunderbolt inside me. And if you eat me, that thunderbolt will kill you. And it's a lightning bolt. It's sharp as a diamond. And if you eat me, it'll kill you. And he's so calm that Sticky Hair just says, okay, I don't want to die. So he puts him down and lets him go. And this is a common trope. Sticky Hair becomes his student and learns the way of Buddhism or proto-Buddhism, whatever that is, learns from him to calm down and becomes then a forest nymph. Yeah, isn't that sweet? So what are we to make of this thing? Well, when I hear five, I'm quite sure that the five are the five senses. And when I see the five weapons, and then he's got five other things, I think of the five. We have five in our Heart Sutra too. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and then also sight, sound, you know, the ways in which we use those. I'm pretty sure that's what this story's about, is using our senses in a way that gets stuck, that gets us stuck in the world. But he has this other weapon that I guess he got from his teacher, which is inside him, and that's the lightning bolt. And the lightning bolt, I think, is this lightning bolt of wisdom that allows us not to get stuck in the things of the world, that allows us to see through our regular way of sensing the world. That, for me, is this wisdom of no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no beard. The world is a sticky place. You know, we get stuck in it all the time. We get stuck in one way of seeing it. What does that story remind you of, by the way? Does that story remind you of any other story that you've heard?
Brer Rabbit.
Yes, exactly. Brer Rabbit. I read, somebody has done a study on this, there are 167 stories just like this of sticky, things getting sticky. So Brer Rabbit, in that one, the Brer Fox makes a tar baby, right? and Brer Rabbit walks by the tar baby, and says hello, and the tar baby doesn't say anything. And Brer Rabbit goes, well, but says something else, still just ignores him. And he gets so angry that he socks him, and then gets completely stuck. And that, you know, the story is, right, like, calm down. When you start to fight the world, that's what you'll get. You'll get enmeshed in it. And I think that is something that we can learn from this practice, to be sure. Just that Brer Rabbit tar baby story. Calm down. Don't get so worked up. But I think the sticky hair story takes, and Bodhidharma takes it a step further, which is to say, let's look at the ways in which we're stuck that are deeper. Look at the ways that we see the world in which that gets us stuck, in a deeper way. And I think Zen can help us unstick ourselves from the world so that we can approach it in a different way, with more creativity and more wisdom and more compassion. So that's all I want to say about beards today.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.